how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my
Glad stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, my co-host, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm very good. Nearly at the end, mate. Last week of Premier League action, obviously, as we're recording this on Tuesday, there's a big match to take place tonight that's going to have a big say in defining what happened on that last weekend. And then all the cup finals to be played out, basically. So we could have really done an episode of like ranking season finales, but I thought about it, but I was like, well, without knowing what happens in Tottenham Man City, it's absolutely redundant episode, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels a little bit that way. And I think that we're now at a stage where obviously the title's been decided across most of Europe. The Premier League will be decided this weekend. That's the last one really live and kicking at this point. There's still lots to be excited about. The relegation battles, I think, especially in Serie A. And, you know, you kick forward into those European spots and the battles for those. There's still things to be decided. But we do feel like we're at a point where most of it's done bar the shouting, I think, is probably the way that I would I'll probably phrase it right now. So we thought that, you know, obviously this summer is a busy one. There's going to be a Copa America. There's going to be a European Championship as well. Those two tournaments are going to dominate the discourse. So we thought we'd get stuck in a little bit early into transfers and five transfer dilemmas, I suppose, that are going to define a little bit of what this summer looks like for various teams. And it's good to have you back in your transfer guru, guys, because it's been a little while.
It has on here. Yeah, obviously on my day to day, I still am doing transfers on a daily basis. But now it's time for me to kick into gear and actually get some of these right. So yeah, that it matters now. When most football journalists can start to calm down a little bit, just look forward to a little break before the international football. It's full on, straight into transfer window. It doesn't open till the middle of June officially, but there's plenty to happen between now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to go into overdrive for you. An exciting time of the year for everybody associated with the transfer world. And we're going to get stuck into those transfers. But before we do that, just wanted to talk a little bit about things we love. And I've decided that I love the fact that yesterday, Jesse Marsh was announced as the new head coach of the Canada national men's team. This is very exciting, as far as I'm concerned, because of what it represents. Now, I don't think this is the most, you know, highly illustrious job in the world. And we'll talk a little bit at the end about what Jesse Marsh's future looks like, and also what, you know, what he could have done as an alternative route this summer. But part of me really, really likes this. And I think the part of me that really likes this is the narrative part. Because what this does, it sets up on an actual level this Berhalter versus Marsh rivalry that's kind of been simmering below the surface for a little while. And, you know, for those of you not aware of the kind of, I wouldn't say blood feud, but there is something bubbling, I think, between Berhalter and Marsh. And look, it comes from a place of a long way back. So Jesse Marsh is a pretty keen student of Bob Bradley, who some people will know, whereas Berhalter has come up kind of under Bruce Arena, who were two very different schools of thought in US soccer. And over the course of the last year, as Marsh has done quite a lot more punditry work and a lot of podcasts and things like that, he's been pretty critical of the way that Berhalter's USMNT have played. He's been some critical of some of his selections. Berhalter's bitten back a little bit about various things there. And there does just seem to be this sort of simmering rivalry between the two of them. And now Jesse Marsh has taken the job of maybe not the USMNT's biggest rivals, but definitely a side that have come up to play against them, their next door neighbors, in the last couple of games. And we're going into a Copa America. Now, I think it's an opportunity for Jesse Marsh to be able to back up the bluster with performances on the pitch. And if Canada, with a worse squad, I think we'd all agree, than the USMNT at this point, were able to match or better them in this tournament, and over the next year will come up against them in various guises and play against them, then I think it adds a lot of shouting to the calls that Marsh was going to be, or should have been, the next USMNT manager after the Berhalter incident, before he was reinstated. And I think on top of that, if the US had a bad Copa America here, that there would have been calls for a change. That kind of call for change has now been muted by the fact that he has another job. And I think that it's incredibly interesting to see how this one plays out. And it is just one of those things where I think you're looking at it holistically and kind of in a full sense. We could get some really, really interesting battles between the two here. But also how the narrative swings, depending on how Marsh's Canada do, is going to be intriguing to watch in that kind of US sphere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that this is a great job for him at this stage of his career. I think he's got a lot to prove, Jesse Marsh. I mean, think back when he came on this podcast. Was he at Salzburg or Leipzig when he came first on ranks?
He just won the league with a double with Salzburg. I think he took the Leipzig job later that summer.
I loved talking to him that day, and like he was a great guy, and he spoke really well. And ever since, I've obviously like tracked his career, and he's gone to Leipzig from Salzburg, and then obviously on the back of that gets the Leeds job, and the Leeds job doesn't go very well. He becomes a slight bit of a joke figure. And to be honest, even in some of his US commentary, I don't think he's covered himself in glory. I think some of his takes have been a bit weird. And so I think there'd have been quite a few US fans with reservations about Jesse Marsh anyway, taking the job based on some of the ideas and thoughts that he had in some of their recent games. But yeah, this adds a different edge to it. Look, he's got a really tough start to Life of Canada. They've got a decent squad. I can understand why he would be tempted to take over this team, because there's a lot of potential there, and they've got some good players that he'll know already very well from his time in the game. But when you look at his opening games, I mean, they've got a couple of friendlies coming up against Holland and France. That's an extremely difficult start for him, trying to find his feet before he goes to a Copa America. He plays Argentina and plays Peru and Chile. I mean, that's really,
it's a tough
really
group, although I think Chile are not the side that maybe they were a couple of years back.
It's just such a different challenge from other things that he's had in his recent past in terms of coaching. So there's a lot to prove here for Jesse Marsh. And, well, he's going one way or the other, isn't he? It's either the beginning or the end. I don't know. It's a strange one. But obviously, yeah, for anyone that's over that side of the world and is encapsulated in this, what will be a new rivalry between Marsh and Canada and the US, you'd like them to play each other for sure.
Yeah.
And you'd like them to have a bit of a war of words going into that Copa America too. But it'd be interesting to see how composed he stays and how much he keeps his counsel. But this is a massive job for him. I'm slightly surprised he took it, but maybe there's just not the jobs out there for him at the moment that because his stock has fallen.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think there are players in this team that should suit the way that Marsh wants to play. I think he'll like Alistair Johnson and Fonzie Davis, depending on where they play them as kind of, you know, Davis plays as a winger or as a defender. I think he'll like Eustáquio, who's had another decent turn, I think, at Porto this season. And I think he'll like Ismaël Koné, who hasn't quite set the world on fire at Watford, but I think he's a very, very good player. Obviously, they have talent in the front line in Jonathan David and Carl Larin, Tejan Buchanan. And Schaffelberg, who obviously came through and started so well recently when he came into this side. So there's players there that I think he'll like. And I think there's some very interesting developments. But this is a quick turnaround now into a tournament. Two games and you're into a major international tournament. That's a risky time to take a job. But I'm very, very intrigued by it. I saw a good tweet by a friend of the pod, Doogie Critchley, who said, Jesse Marsh probably has a lot of sound personal and professional reasons to accept the Canada job. But I can't help thinking that he could have landed a pretty respectable job in Europe's top five leagues this summer if he'd waited it out. And there was a little bit of kickback to this in terms of, obviously, the Leipzig job didn't go to plan, the Leeds job didn't go to plan. People were like, well, you know, the record's not great. Doogie made the point. He was like, well, yesterday Bayern Munich were making offers to Crystal Palace for Oliver Glasner. And he's not saying that Bayern Munich are going to go and appoint Jesse Marsh, but whoever they do appoint might end up being someone that they end up picking from a team lower down the table. And then there might be a sort of domino fall, if you will, that kind of pegs down the leagues as managers move up into roles with bigger clubs. And it might have left a few vacancies where Jesse Marsh's name would have been tossed around. So there's that to consider maybe. As well.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Glasner's on the up and Jesse Marsh is on his way down. That's the problem.
Yeah, of course. I'm not saying that Marsh is going to have got the Bayern job.
I don't think he'd got the Palace job though, mate.
No, I know. But if Palace had picked up a manager from, you know, someone lower down the
Darmstadt.
League,
yeah, maybe he could have got the Darmstadt job.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think there was some interesting vacancies opening up.
Yeah, the domino effect. I get it. But yeah, I do think that this is emblematic of where the decisions that he's made of the clubs and how they haven't worked out the last two jobs. Doesn't mean he's a bad coach, but he's got to prove it this time. And it's obviously a very different job going into international management. The amount of time he's going to get to spend with these players before these games isn't going to be very high. So massive challenge, but yeah, a lot of fun actually. I hadn't really thought about the rivalry element of it until you've brought it up today. So yeah, that is definitely an exciting factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's gone in at Things We Love. We'll park that there. Just before we move on to the transfers, Dean, I wanted to just shout one more thing out. I haven't told you this yet. This is going to be a live reveal on air, but ooh, I wanted to give a massive shout out to Max, who came up to me in the Purple Turtle in Reading on Saturday night and was like, I love ranks, man. And I'd lost the golf weekend. We'd lost the cup. And I was, you know, I was getting by. Well, my brother had won. A lot of people who listen to this podcast, shouts out the green caps who listen, shouts out the white caps who listen. But they'd won. And I was a little bit like, it's annoying. And completely turned my night around. Made my night. Came over, was like, I love you guys. Shouts out to Dean. Shouts out to Sam. And we had a really nice picture. It was,
yeah,
it was,
I saw the
really,
picture. Yeah,
really
I did see
lovely.
You post the picture. Yeah.
Yeah. So shouts out to Max, who, he turned my Saturday evening around and is a listener. So
yeah, random
nice
hellos
one.
From listeners in real life. Well, they're
especially
more rare these days.
Especially in random locations, right? Like obviously with Fulham and Fulhamish, like everyone's in the same location and you're at the cottage or whatever, it happens. But with ranks, obviously everyone's a little bit more far flung. It's a little bit more kind of all over the place. And to have one in Reading, in a bar in Reading, completely made my night. Completely made my night. So shout out to Max.
Oh, nice one. Well done, Max.
All righty. Well, we'll leave part one there. After the break, Dean is going to be talking about these transfer dilemmas. Back in full transfer guru mode. You love to see it. Don't go anywhere.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Head to White Castle for 12 crispy, all-white meat chicken rings for just $3.99. For a limited time, choose from Classic, Hidden Valley Ranch, or our new Smoky Barbecue flavor. And take home 12 chicken rings for just $3.99. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it gives me great pleasure to hand the floor to Mr. Dean Jones to talk transfers.
Yeah, so we got 5 big talking points today. Not really a ranking as such, but I guess I'm actually going to be starting with the most important thing that needs to be fixed of everyone everywhere this summer. It's Man United's defence at number one. I mean, there's loads of stuff, obviously, for Man United to fix. They got their stadium to fix because it's full of holes in the roof. They need to sort out what they're doing with their manager. They need to figure out what they're going to do in midfield. They need to figure out how they're going to get players fit for the foreseeable future. Everything, forwards, whatever. But United's defence is obviously massive. And today, actually, Rafael Varane has formally announced that he is leaving Manchester United. And at the weekend, it'll be his last game at the club. So this fits quite well with the theme of today. Now, obviously, this isn't a surprise. We've known for a while that Varane would be going. But, you know, United's defensive crisis has been pretty deep. And it's basically the thing that might save Ten Hag is the fact that they are so sympathetic at the fact that he's had no one to call upon. And look, Casemiro has been filling in at the back. But he's leaving as well. So he'll be
filling in is maybe doing him a service, I'll be honest.
Well, he's been standing there. He's been standing in the centre-back position. Johnny Evans. Maybe, yeah, maybe not standing there sometimes. Johnny Evans. He's 36 years old. He started way too many games for someone of at his stage of his career and at his standard. Fair play to him.
He came back to do his coaching badges.
Fair play to how well he does. Yeah,
100%. In all respect.
But this ain't the answer and it has to be solved. And he might well remain on the playing staff. We'll have to wait to see. I'd be surprised. Even if he is, he can't play many games. So Varane's going, Casemiro's going, Johnny Evans can't be involved that much. Harry Maguire, they'll be open to offers for potentially as well. We'll have to wait to see how that one pans out. That's not totally convincing yet. But from speaking to people, you get the impression that it's him or Lindelof that does go, and they're leaning closer towards Lindelof staying. Obviously, Lisandro Martinez will be staying. Willy Kambwala will be staying. But United need new defenders. And so some of the key names in the frame right now, if United go and sign defenders, there'll be a two-tiered approach to this, is how I think is the best way to describe it. They'll get a top player, somebody that we've all heard of, if not seen. But they'll also sign somebody that's emerging. So in terms of that main centre-half, you've all read about Jarrod Branthwaite. It's true, Man United do really like Jarrod Branthwaite and they would like to sign him. They don't really want to spend much more than £50 million on Jarrod Branthwaite, which is a problem because Everton value him a lot higher than that. And United are kind of relying on the fact that Everton are in a financial mess and need to sell players to open the door for them to sign Branthwaite. The problem is Everton will probably look to offload somebody like Amadou Onana before they have to get to that stage. So it's going to be difficult. But yeah, United love Branthwaite, love how he's already got experience in the league, but also got a lot of room for growth in this league. And obviously his age and everything fits perfectly. If they don't get him, I personally think they'll go for Jean-Claire Todibo at Nice. I think that it's kind of perfect for them. Nice, obviously owned by Ineos, who have part ownership at Man United. There are no problems with United doing a deal like that, taking Todibo from Nice to Man United. The fact that the people who are making the big decisions now have an understanding of Todibo and what he would bring to the club, I think is important. And you're talking about a signing there, it's about £40 million, which is pretty good value, to be honest, when you look at other options around Europe for that position this summer. Other potential options would be like Antonio Silva. They've scouted him loads. They love him. The scouts can't stop recommending him. But he's a lot of money. He's a lot of money. And I'm not personally convinced that one will happen. But it's one to be aware of, as is Gleison Bremer at Juventus. So again, expensive, slightly difficult to do, but definitely a player of interest. In terms of that second tier that I was talking about, look out for a player called Aaron Andaminho. He's an 18-year-old defender from Boca Juniors that United have been watching very closely, I believe have progressed reasonably far down the line. And that kind of fits with what they want to do. Sign somebody. He's got pretty good experience with Boca, to be honest, considering he's 18 and only broke through recently. Really high ceiling, really admired. United are looking at this longer vision now. This isn't about worrying about the next season or two seasons. They want to make sure that they're well set for the next 5 to 10 years, which is dangerous because if they're terrible in the next 1 to 2 years, then that's going to have a knock-on effect. But this is where we're at. Also, Jack, one to look out for is Tosin Adebayo. Man United are genuinely exploring that. Now, I wouldn't say that they're favourites to sign him. I would say probably Newcastle are. But United see an opportunity there. Tosin's from Manchester. He was born there. He grew up in the Manchester City Academy, which is interesting. Also what's interesting is Jason Wilcox now has a role at Man United, which is helping oversee some of these big decisions. And he was at Man City when Tosin was breaking through, has a great awareness of what he's capable of. Look, Adebayo, I've found him difficult to judge at Fulham. He's throughout his time, when did he join? 2020? He's had a great season, right? Well, he's had a great most of this season. I'm personally not sure quite that he's a top defender, right? I think he's a very good defender. But for Man United, if they want to get defensive depth in, then it's obviously better to be able to call on somebody like him than Casemiro or Johnny Evans potentially. So that's where I think we're at the moment with Man United. I think this is absolutely crucial to this team actually moving on anywhere. We've seen, obviously, the defensive problems that they've had, the injury problems they've had. That obviously extends to the fullback positions as well, where like Luke Shaw's been missing and stuff. And maybe we do see a new left back coming too. But United have to nail this. They absolutely have to nail these centre-back signings this summer.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because they have obviously players that need to... We spoke about Shadibo last summer and we were talking about the fact that it made sense as a kind of, okay, you can bed him in underneath Varane, give him a year to acclimatise and then walk into that team the year after and be like, no, this is mine now to lose. I've developed, I feel comfortable here and that's where I'm, you know, able to kick on. This one now seems more like a risk. And obviously there's a risk attached to every signing. So I'm not suggesting that Tadebo isn't a wonderful footballer, he is. But there is now that sense of being like, right, you have to come in and fix this. And if there is a major overhaul, as there looks like there's going to be, as you say, you know, obviously Varane leaving, Johnny Evans stepping back into a more reduced role, one of Lindelof or Maguire leaving, it's going to open up a big gap. And bear in mind that Lisandro Martinez has not played all that much this season due to injury. Yeah. So even him coming back in doesn't feel as sort of natural and comfortable as perhaps it might have done if he'd played all season. And it's like, okay, we're finding a partner for Lisandro. I still think that's what they're doing, but it's finding a partner for Lisandro who is able to hit the ground running. Tosin in that regard makes sense, but you kind of struggle with the idea of then being like, well, is he your first choice centre-back? Because I don't know if that's a huge kind of major upgrade for United. I like Tosin a lot. I think he's a really, really talented footballer. He still has mistakes in his locker. I think he's a Premier League caliber footballer, no doubt about it. Mm. But whether he's a top six, top four Premier League caliber footballer, I think that's yet to be seen. If we're honest,
he's only 26. I actually like that's
it's a good age, and there's growth to be had there still. 100%. I'm not doubting any of those things. I just think it's one of those where you're kind of looking at being like, oh, is that the answer to United's problems? If they go down that route, and that's the centre back they bring as a starting partner for Lisandro, have they heavily upgraded? Not from where I'm sitting. So, you know, Branthwaite feels like he's had a very, very good year. He was excellent at PSV as well the year before that. And, you know, that felt like a natural progression into Everton's team. And I think him making a jump up would also feel relatively natural at this point. Although, again, we have a limited sample size in the Premier League that we have to deal with. And you have to bear in mind that those things, you know, are difficult and defending and performing under the lights at Old Trafford is different to it is performing under the lights at Goodison. And that's not with any disrespect to Everton. It's just how it is. We've seen a lot of players come in here and not be able to do it at Old Trafford, not be able to do it in a team that has felt discombobulated for the last couple of years, maybe last year aside, has felt like it's a little bit all over the place. So it's a really difficult job that they have here. And as you say, this two-tier approach feels like it's necessary. But equally, if you're Tosin Adebayo, for example, and Newcastle say, well, you come in and you probably start. And United say, well, you come in, but we're also signing Tadebo. And Lindelof's going to stay. And, you know, Willy Kambuala's coming through. You know, how many games are you actually going to play? Especially if United miss out on Europe. The question marks remain, I think.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, Man United obviously won't need as many signings. If they're not in Europe next season, then their squad, they don't actually need to go out and make as many signings as they would otherwise, to be honest with you. That's something to look out for. Other players that potentially come into the frame, Mark Guehi, Inacio at Sporting, Max Kilman at Wolves. They've looked at all of these players, to be honest. There's a long list. I've tried to whittle it down to the ones that I think are most likely there, but there are other candidates and that could obviously change because we're only in mid-May at the moment. So that's what the first thing to look out for. The second thing I think is quite exciting, actually. The second thing to talk about here is wingers. And the reason is, well, look, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, perhaps Aston Villa will all look to sign wide players in this next window. And
surely not Chelsea. They have about 200 wingers.
Well, they'll always be in the market.
And they've just signed Willian Estevao.
They haven't signed him yet, have they? Is that done?
Well, I mean, they're on the verge of signing Willian Estevao.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure that's going through. But yeah, they're close to it. Look, I've mentioned Chelsea because they've spoken to at least one of the players that I'm about to mention. And it's interesting as to where these lads end up. The three players that are up for grabs: Nico Williams from Athletic Bilbao, £52 million. Pedro Neto at Wolves. I don't know the exact price. This is going to come out in the washout, but let's stay £70 to £80 million. And Michael Olise, Crystal Palace, £60 million. So those clubs interested. Also worth throwing Barcelona into this conversation because
right wingers there you've mentioned as well, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's interesting from the Arsenal perspective of them being interested in any of these because they've got Saka on the right wing, and I don't completely understand why they're looking at Nico Williams, but they've sounded him out. But yeah, Barcelona like Nico Williams too. Now, I mean, let's get your opinion on it first. Which of those three, take out the price tags for a second, which of those three players would you pick to join your club this summer?
Well, I love all three of them, so I'd be delighted with any of them, but just to be perfectly honest with you. I think if you're a Premier League club, Pedro Neto makes probably the most sense. I think whilst he is the most expensive, I think there's a consistent track record of doing it. He can play on either flank, although I think he's better off the right. And there is that sense that he can sort of work within any sort of front three. I think that he'd be a very, very sensible replacement, if I'm honest, for someone like a Mohamed Salah at Liverpool if he was to go. I think that's the kind of maneuver I would look at if I was Liverpool. Olise, I think, probably has the highest ceiling of the three. And what he's done this season at Palace is incredible. But that injury record concerns me a little bit. And I think that when you see, you know, how much of this season he's missed, when you look back at it, and it is a lot, suddenly that figure of 60 million does actually look a little bit suspect. Not necessarily because I don't think he's a £60 million player. I think he is. But, you know, having had this season and the amount of hamstring injuries he's had at young age, slightly worrying, I think, in that regard. And Nico Williams is brilliant, but equally, I think he's at a space where he still has, you know, games where he goes missing. He had one at the weekend where he just was completely unable to affect the game whatsoever. He still has games where he is incredibly frustrating in terms of what he brings to the table, in terms of running into alleyways, in terms of losing the ball and not getting back to try and win it back. There is still a real element of rawness about him that I think is a wonderful thing for this Athletic side, but maybe might not be such a brilliant thing to have in a more refined team, because there is that sense of he just might mess up the attacking structural patterns. He might just leave us open to transitional attacks. There is that sense of jeopardy, I think, with Nico Williams, that he is not yet the finished product. He is not yet the polished diamond. He is still absolutely wonderful to watch. But I think if I was signing one of those three players, it would be Pedro Neto. Yes, also had injury issues. I'm not skirting away from that. But I think the length of time he's been performing and what he's done over the last few years probably puts him at the top of that pile for me, then Olise, and then Nico Williams.
Yeah, Nico Williams also looking for huge wages. I'm surprised that the numbers that have been mentioned to me of what he's looking for in terms of personal terms, extremely high, like literally would make him the top earner at most clubs in the Premier League.
Yeah, like, but bear in mind that Athletic do pay big wages because
they do. I was surprised about that. Yeah, right? I was surprised.
That's part of the joy of the club.
When the number was mentioned to me, and look, it was close to £300,000 from what I was told. £300,000 a week. I was like, what? And then I looked up his current salary, and I was like, oh wow. Like he's already on like £200,000 a week, basically. I couldn't believe that, but yeah, he is. You've mentioned Liverpool. Yeah, don't forget Liverpool, because they do have a situation coming up they need to address. Not just Salah, Luis Diaz. Luis Diaz, I'm not convinced, won't get a little irritable or may even agitate if Barcelona look in his direction. We'll have to wait to see whether that happens, but yeah, we just mentioned Barcelona there in terms of Nico Williams. They like him too. Barcelona looks like they're going to try and get rid of Rafinha. this summer. And again, I'll throw Rafinha into the mix. Rafinha as a Premier League target this summer, definitely something to look out for. Arsenal tried to sign him previously. He chose Barcelona instead because that was his dream. I think Rafinha's actually done okay this season, to be honest with you. And he's
scored again last night from the spot.
Yeah, he's desperate to obviously stay there. Will not want to leave, but keep your eyes on the Rafinha situation as well. So there's a lot to look out for, yeah, but those three players, primarily, and Nico Williams, Neto and Elise, are going to be big transfer talking points. But their knock-on effects of that, there is obviously Salah and Rafinha to come into the equations too. So lots to digest. I'm going to move on to number three. This is just a simple one player, where does he land scenario. Victor Osimhen is his name. Literally, as I've just saying that, I've got an update just popped up on my phone that says PSG are in pole position to sign Victor Osimhen, says Gazzetta dello Sport. And they are. Yeah, that is definitely the case. But that doesn't mean that Chelsea have given up on this situation. Chelsea refused to walk away from the table. They have reason to believe that Osimhen is interested in joining them. But obviously PSG as Mbappe's replacement is something that the ego of a top player wants, right? And I can understand why Osimhen would think he can go into that team, be successful, score a lot of goals, and also become the new poster boy of PSG. Fine, I get it. A massive release clause. It's 130 million euros. What's that, about 115 million pounds? Yeah, something like that. Yep. Huge amount of money. Now, Chelsea would be like, well, Chelsea go and do another deal like this? How can Chelsea go and spend over 100 million pounds? But don't forget, they're trying to be very smart at the moment. To be fair, these owners,
they're selling their women's team, aren't they?
They're selling whatever they can. They're selling hotels to themselves. They're selling the training ground to each other. They're selling whatever they can and finding
just
ways.
Just for what it's worth, that story about getting investment in the women's team, if that's to help circumvent FFP rules or PSR rules on the male team, that is a horrendous place for football to be in, just as a kind of flat line. That is just the hotels. I'm kind of like, whatever. The hotels belong to Chelsea. If they want to sell them, then that's up to them.
They're selling them to themselves. That's the weird thing about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the whole, like, it feels a bit like the levers that Barcelona pulled and whatever. But, like, equally, I don't know if it's a long-term strategy that's going to pay off. But, like, if they want to do that, then that's kind of fine as long as, you know, it's all within the rules. The question, I think, if they start selling off investment in the women's team in order to fund PSR with the male team, I have that makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have any guru insight on that one. So we'll have to wait to see for another day how that comes out in the wash. But yeah, Chelsea would love Osimhen. I think the vision there would be that Osimhen obviously goes through the middle and Nicholas Jackson moves out wide. I've obviously slated Nicholas Jackson on numerous occasions across this season. He's just not a finisher. I say that he's going to end up with season
goals, yeah,
with probably 15 goals. So I can't knock that either. Like, he's actually managed to get a good first season return. But if Chelsea want to get to where they want to get, which is Champions League again, they need somebody that's more clinical in front of goal than Nicholas Jackson. You know, let's not go back and look at all of those goals. And I always say that your average man on the street wouldn't score a single goal in a Premier League season. I actually would have scored a couple of Nicholas Jackson's goals. So there you go. If they don't sign Osimhen, few to look out for. Ivan Toney, still on their radar.
Where are Brentford with Ivan Toney? I'm actually just quite intrigued by this because obviously his stock is nowhere near as high as it was a year ago. You know, obviously he's been missing for a long part of this season. And I don't mean that in a, you know, that's just how it is. Since he's come back, he's not been great in terms of what he's brought to the table. There's been a lot of noise out of Brentford, I think, about the way that it's been discussed and the way that he's performed and what he's shown, not really been up to scratch on the pitch. So, and they've signed Igor Thiago, who has had a pretty good end to the season, I think, with Club Bruges. And what we've seen from him, I think I like as a raw prospect coming into the Premier League. I think that seems like a very sensible bit of business from Brentford. But I don't know if both of them can be there next season. Does that like sort of exacerbate that process? Do they have to get rid of him now? Or is this a case of them being like, well, if he's available and about, we back him to continue delivering on the goods for us?
he obviously wants to leave Brentford. I think he's wanted to leave Brentford for a while now.
Yeah, yeah. And look, he has very, very high expectations of himself, and that's fine, right? Like, it is what it is. I think, but also, like, from a Brentford perspective, they should be like, well, just, like, let's have people in who really care and want to do this. And that's where we're at.
Oh, well, their big problem for Brentford is how much money they'll actually get offered for him. I mean, you say he's not where he was a year ago. Well, he is in a way, because he's on the verge of being included in the England squad for a European Championship. And that counts for a lot when it comes to actually negotiating around a player's fee. Like, whether or not he actually does make the cut, we'll have to wait to see. But, like, he's in there with a shout.
I don't even support England. And if Tony goes instead of Watkins, I'm going to throw my toys out of the pram.
But the general consensus is that Brentford will want £60 million for Ivan Toney, but no one's really going to pay more than £45 million for him at the moment.
That's basically where we're at.
Sorry?
Would they accept that?
They say they won't, but we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to see how stubborn they are around it. I mean, at the end of the day, if you've got a player that wants to go, if you've semi-replaced him already and you've been getting your head around it for a while, you can try and push it up towards 50, I guess. Tottenham will be interested, and Chelsea will be in that conversation as well. And actually, he'd probably do a decent job at both. You know, there have been reservations around his personality and his character in terms of how he would fit into other teams, and a couple of clubs have walked away from this situation. But he's a good player, mate. He is a good player.
Absolutely.
And actually, when he came back from suspension, the highest, you know, his stock has never been higher than when he was actually suspended. People were talking about him like he was Pele. He came back and I was like, oh, do you know what? His first three games, he's actually been awesome here. You're right. He's fallen a little way from that standard. But anyway, Chelsea.
Three games.
Yeah. Benjamin Sesko. Victor Boniface, both players that Chelsea like. They haven't been linked with this one yet, but it won't surprise me to see them have a look at Dom Solanke at Bournemouth if those other deals don't prove possible. I do get the feeling.
What about Lukaku? Is he coming back? What's going on?
So Lukaku's not playing for Chelsea ever again. Solanke, there's a semi-decent chance that he leaves Bournemouth this summer.
His stock is also very high. I think that Solanke would probably fit into this Chelsea team.
It's just the value of Solanke, I guess, because the Bournemouth will obviously get everything they can for him because he's in a good moment.
Yeah, absolutely. His stock is incredibly high. I would suggest that his stock is probably where Ivan Toney's stock was last year. And maybe not in terms of England selection, but in terms of what he's done in the Premier League and the numbers he's put up. But equally, it looks like he's in a very good place. This Bournemouth team are in a good place. So if he stays, I don't think it would be end of the world stuff for him. I can't see him agitating for a move. If a big offer comes in, he might say, yeah, please, could you accept that? But I can't see him agitating for it if nothing comes in. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one develops. Whereas I think Ivan Toney at Brentford feels like he's probably done all he can. That's the thing. There is that. I've talked about this before, but I think that Ivan Toney's kind of arrogance, and I mean that in a positive way, is the kind of thing you need at Chelsea. To wear that number 9 shirt for Chelsea, to be that guy, you know, I think you need to be a certain type of character to carry it off. We saw Diego Costa carry it off, obviously. We saw Drogba carry it off. I think that there is an element of Ivan Toney that would mean that he'd fit in, you know, as the Chelsea number 9. He'd be like, yeah, I'll have that weight of pressure on my shoulders. Give it. I want it all. I want all the smoke. So, I do quite like it as a move, I'll be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. So that's where we are on the striker front. As I say, I do personally think that Osimhen will end up signing for PSG, but important to remember that Chelsea will not just go away.
Who leaves then? Because you probably can't have Randall Colomwani, Victor Osimhen and Gonzalo Ramos all in that side at the same time. Ramos is currently on loan with an obligation to buy, I think, if I'm not mistaken, from Benfica. So that's going to have to go through this summer. You can obviously sell a player immediately after buying them. It's happened before, but he feels the most likely of the three to go. And yet that's still a big, you know, they're not going to reclaim what they paid for Gonzalo Ramos either from the performances this season. I actually think he's done all right, but, you know, they probably overpaid a tad in terms of potential last year. And now that he's had that year and it hasn't gone, you know, incredibly, it's gone well, but not incredibly, they're not going to recoup the kind of money that they've spent on Gonzalo Ramos, and that leaves him in a bit of a weird position.
No, it does, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I don't know how they get around that one. But similar with Xavi Simmons, who, you know, PSG want to bring him back into the frame after he's been out at Leipzig. I think Xavi Simmons isn't convinced about how much playing time he'll get and how he definitely fits in that structure. And there's quite a lot for PSG to figure out this summer. But throwing money at someone probably fits what they have typically been about.
If it's the old model anyway, whether if it's the new one is...
They can't go totally away from it, mate.
No, that's true.
Okay. The fourth talking point is goalkeeper dominoes.
I love dominoes in any sense in football. I love it when like managerial dominoes go. Goalkeeper dominoes is a new one. This is good.
Well, primarily this involves Newcastle, Arsenal and Chelsea. But look out, Everton and Aston Villa. So Aaron Ramsdale, let's start with him because he's obviously going to be leaving Arsenal. He's too good to just sit on a bench watching David Raya every weekend. So he's going to seek a transfer and Newcastle are the favourites to sign him. Like that is
makes sense.
Pretty likely to happen. Nick Pope. Sorry, mate. I remember when I first reported this story way back when Ramsdale first had his head-to-head showdown with Raya and everyone was like, there's no chance this is happening. Nick Pope's there. I'm like, it's happening. Like
the injury hasn't helped. I do actually really like Nick Pope. I think he's a brilliant goalkeeper. And if he becomes second choice at Newcastle, he should move as well.
Well, he probably will. Yeah, he's not part of this, but he will be part of the dominoes. Yeah, but Ramsdale's younger. He's probably better, and he's somebody that Hal knows very well, and he likes. So I would expect that Aaron Ramsdale does end up at Newcastle, even though Chelsea do also like him. Now, obviously, if he leaves Arsenal, which he will, then Arsenal need to find a new backup goalkeeper. David Raya will be the undisputed number one. And Arsenal need to find someone who's happy to be backup. But importantly, Arsenal need homegrown players to come in this next transfer window because...
Nick Pope.
maybe Nick Pope will be happy to sit on the Arsenal bench. Ramsdale will be going... And then there's obviously situations around Eddie Nketiah and Emil Smith Rowe and Reece Nelson, and they're going to have to replace that. That status within the squad build is important in terms of making it all balance out. And so two names in the frame at the moment that Arsenal are looking at, Wojciech Szczęsny has been sounded out as a potential to come back into the club from Juventus, and Jason Steele at Brighton is also an option to come in as Arsenal's new number two for next season. Personally, I get the feeling that Steele is more likely than Szczęsny. And that's
the,
for two
the
reasons.
The homecoming of Wojciech Szczęsny would be quite something, actually. I've got to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's two reasons that's stopping it, really. One is I think he believes he can continue at Juve in the job that he's doing. And secondly, his wages are high for what would be a backup goalkeeper. But yeah, obviously, there's that emotional attachment. And I can understand why Arsenal would see that would be a positive thing to have coming back, especially if Szczęsny was happy to take that role within the squad. But still, a good goalkeeper. If he's happy to sit on the bench at Brighton, he'll be happy to sit on the bench at Arsenal, I'm sure. A good quality keeper that you could trust if he was to come into the frame.
Yeah.
And I can believe that might have legs and that Steele would be interested in that position. So that is also interesting. And then to move on to Chelsea, I mean, look, I think Jordi Petrovic has done a good job since he's gone in there. Robert Sanchez is obviously a decent goalkeeper, but I don't think that he's going to be the answer. And I think he'll probably leave. Petrovic, I think, will stay at the club, but they want somebody to become the number one. They want somebody who's not just better, but probably more experienced. It's difficult to know exactly where they're going to land on this one at the moment. I've already mentioned Ramsdale, somebody that they're interested in. That's obviously largely down to his availability. If they're going to go within the Premier League, Jordan Pickford's on the radar and Emi Martinez is on the radar. Two players to look out for that Chelsea will look to pursue. Jordan Pickford, obviously, because Everton's financial situation means he could go. I personally don't think he will. I don't think that Jordan Pickford will end up making that move, but Chelsea definitely want to be involved in the discussion if that becomes plausible. And Emi Martinez, I mean, this is a story that began to emerge at the end of last week. I think I wrote about it on the day, actually, that Villa played in Europe last week.
Thursday.
Obviously, last night, Monday night, Emi Martinez has thrown one into his own net. Felt a bit sorry for him, to be fair. It was a bit of bad luck. But I tell you what, that would be a hell of a signing. What are Chelsea lacking? They're lacking leaders. They're lacking experience. They're lacking that winning mentality. And they're lacking somebody that can win them every penalty shootout they'll ever play again. So Emi Martinez, I think personally, would be an outstanding signing. He's not going to be cheap. I mean, this is one of the best goalkeepers. Well, everyone has their head turned at some stage. And I think
Villa are about to play in the Champions League. They've been comfortably, I think, the fourth best team in the league this year. Yes, this Chelsea side are starting to make a little bit of a dent in the top six and looking to push for that Europa League spot. I'd be shocked if Dibu Martinez jumps ship right now. I'd be shocked.
I don't think I would, to be honest. I mean, you could also say that this is as good as Villa are ever going to be. He's 31 years old. He's going to a Chelsea team that are going to be on their way up next season. Aston Villa aren't going to be finishing fourth in the league again. Yes, they'll have a Champions League campaign to play in, but they'll probably lose in the group stages and that'll be done by Christmas.
I don't think he's ever played in the Champions League.
Well, we're playing the season after for Chelsea if he gets this move. As I say, it's very early days and this is all about interest and potential targets. But yeah, as part of these dominoes, you know, Chelsea obviously going to be in that market, and Ramsdale, Pickford, potentially Emi Martinez are players that they're going to be looking at for that role.
I'm wrong. He did actually play in two Champions League games in 2014. How about that?
Oh, did he?
For Arsenal. There you go, all the way back.
Oh, blimey, yeah, way back when. Back then, he's definitely a better keeper now than he was then.
He is indeed.
But yeah, so some interesting goalkeeper decisions to look out for. And it's all going to lean on the fact that Aaron Ramsdale will be leaving Arsenal. So that's fun. That's fun, a bit of dominoes. The final thing to talk about, Jack, is Newcastle United have two outstanding players.
They do.
Can they hold on to one? Can they hold on to both? Can they hold on to neither? Bruno Guimarães and Alexander Isak. Guimarães has a 100 million release clause that is active this transfer window. He has interest from Manchester City and he has interest from Arsenal. I've heard this from a few different people now, so I'm confident that interest is real. PSG have been linked. I haven't checked that out myself, but sources in France have been knocking that back, saying that PSG won't try to sign him. I can't tell you any more than that on it, but they have been linked.
They have Vitinha and Zaire Emery. It does make loads of sense. I think Bruno's a brilliant player, but I think that PSG look quite stacked in midfield and young players as well.
I don't know that this is the midfielder that I imagined Arsenal ending up with. You know,
Me neither. Absolutely not. Like, I don't think if they're looking for someone to sit in there alongside Declan Rice and allow him to push on and be that player and be that more attacking, roaming eight, I don't think Bruno is the six you want.
No. I think him and Rice probably have aspirations to be the same sort of players, to be honest. But Arteta, 100% massive fan of Bruno Guimarães. And if they saw the door open, I do believe that Arsenal would look to try and do that. Man City, definitely still like him too. Obviously, they're looking at signing Lucas Paquetá from West Ham as well. So yeah, something to look out for on that front. Alex Isak, I can't see him leaving Newcastle. I think he will stay. There's a non-Champions League clause in his contract, which I reported a few weeks ago, which means that his wages are going to drop at the end of this season because Newcastle aren't in the Champions League next season. But Newcastle have made it clear to his representatives, look, don't worry, like, that won't affect him. We will renegotiate his contract and we'll make sure he's rewarded for the levels that he's been hitting. Now, that's interesting, and I think Isak will be interested in staying. Will he get a clause in there like Bruno's got? That's what will be interesting to me. Will they? And if he did, it probably wouldn't be active until the following year anyway. But I would imagine that if Bruno Guimarães has got a clause like that, then Alex Isak will have a pretty a pretty similar clause that lets him get out of there too, because there's interest in this guy.
A similar value as well. But I mean, what Isak's put together, I'm so high on Isak. The way that he scores goals, I think is really impressive. And that sounds a bit like wishy-washy.
Well, no, he's so accurate. He's so accurate.
He hits the corners every time. He's a brilliant footballer.
And, you know, he's been linked to other clubs, particularly Arsenal, actually. Arsenal get linked a lot to him. And there is something in that. Again, I don't think Arsenal believe that they could sign Isak. But if you think about the way that Arsenal's front line works, Isak would actually be kind of ideal for it because, yeah, he could be that number nine type figure. But we know that Isak works well off the left as well. And actually, I think that that's quite interesting for the next move that he makes to see, because he can cover two positions. I think it makes him more desirable. And that's going to be obviously a problem for Newcastle in terms of holding on to him. Callum Wilson will be leaving Newcastle this summer. So there's also a potential that Newcastle look to sign a striker, even if Isak stays, and maybe that's a stopgap too. I've talked about Dom Solanke earlier. I believe that Dom Solanke will be a target for Newcastle.
Eddie Howe signing a Bournemouth player.
Exactly. He's bringing Ramsdale in, an old Bournemouth player, bringing in Solanke from Bournemouth. I'm not saying that will not happen because it'll be a lot of money, I think, for Solanke, but it's one to look out for.
That feels like the kind of move that might happen if Isak goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would think the same thing. I wonder if it might happen anyway. I wonder if they might try to do that anyway, because they've got to replace Callum Wilson, you'd imagine. I don't know that they've got enough within the current squad to just leave it. Solanke would be a big get. You know, that's very ambitious.
Yeah.
But that's what Newcastle were trying to show at the moment. You know, but you've got a lot of teams at the moment trying to get that fourth Champions League place that we just talked about Emi Martinez currently having. Next season, Chelsea want that spot, Man United want that spot, Newcastle want that spot, etc., etc. Only one team can have it, and that's
well,
three
maybe not
going
maybe two teams can have it, because it depends how the British sides or the English sides in this regard play in
next season.
So yeah, who knows how it shakes out, but it'd be very exciting nonetheless, I think. So yeah it's a good one, and there's a lot to think about there, isn't there?
There is, yeah. I mean, look, I haven't spoken about Mbappe in this conversation. We all know that that is going to be the biggest transfer of this summer.
We also did a full episode on him in January. I think we're probably covered on that regard.
There's no storyline there, but obviously we're very excited about seeing how this develops and like what happens next and how Barcelona will retaliate to what Real Madrid are doing at the moment. That's what I'm most intrigued by.
Can Barcelona retaliate? Yeah.
Well, I was speaking to, you know, a guy that I speak to regularly about transfers and, you know, kind of trading information and what you've heard and stuff. He's like, there is no way that Haaland is not in Barcelona's sights as soon as this Man City part is over, as he goes in there to replace Lewandowski. He was convinced of it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be a nice narrative. He's like, no, it's not a narrative. It's going to happen. It'll be Haaland and Mbappe and La Liga will be back. I was like, I kind of do want that. I do want to have La Liga to have that like star factor again, because while it has been building back, you know, obviously since Messi Ronaldo ended, some glitz and glamour went with it, didn't it? And it's still obviously a great league, but it'd be nice for both of them to have an actual superstar.
Yeah, I agree.
By the way, there's Vinicius Jr. who is already at Real Madrid, so I don't want to say that he's not a superstar or Jude Bellingham isn't a superstar, because they are. But
also there's a Lamine Yamal, and there is Vitor Roque and Endrick coming in, all of these different elements and narratives to go there as well. So lots to think about in that regard as well. But yeah, I think we'll call that segment there. We'll be back after the break for a very special edition and some very special guru wisdom. Don't go anywhere.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. Is Jean Lafitte?
And it's stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my Glad Stretch, feeling fine so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Welcome back to Rags FC, where it's time for our third and final part, and we are going to be giving you some...
Guru wisdom.
I'm delighted to say that there is actually some real wisdom from the guru this week. For the last couple of weeks, it's felt like Dean has been finding things from different places, been dragging them in. But we're going to go back to something that happened last week, where Dean had his Real Madrid moment for the season. Now, those of you who are patrons already know this, but on our Patreon show every Thursday, Friday, when it comes out, the late week show, we do a game called Pick 11. We get a 10 coin bet and a 1 coin bet. It's a whole little bit of fun in terms of how it's gone. Now, Dean has been having a terrible season in terms of predictions. He's had 133 coins back across the course of the weeks that we've had. For contrast, the patrons, is a different patron every week, have been on 338 points at the start of last week. They were 205 points clear of Dean, and I was on 324, so 190-odd points clear of Dean. Dean hadn't won a bet on our Patreon since Christmas Eve. It's been a bad 2024. But the beauty of Pick 11 is it allows you to be a little bit more outlandish. You can't be just getting a certain amount of points. It allows you to drag yourselves back from the brink. And Dean did it in a pretty miraculous way. I'm just going to roll the tape.
Gvardiol is going to stick one past Bernd Leno. Gvardiol is in incredible form at the moment.
Yeah, he's playing really, really well.
And he's a top FPL asset, by the way, that's absolutely restoring my credibility in that game. On a nice little run at the moment, I am. And I have to say, Gvardiol's played a big part in it. I figured it'd be long odds. I figured there's a reasonable chance that he scores. So I'm going for it, mate. Gvardiol, first goal against Fulham.
28-1.
Whoa! Should have gone bet. 10 coins on it.
Big bet.
Shall I switch
imagine.
Shall I switch him?
Shall you switch him?
Shall I?
I mean, you could do.
If that happened at 10 coins, am I winning? Yes. Switch them.
All right. 10 coins on Gvardiol.
10 coins. Gvardiol, first goal against Fulham.
This was supposed to be the point of Pick 11, right? That when it got to the end of the season, you can start making outlandish bets to try and like rein it in the last
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
so what am I doing? Yeah.
So 28-1, 10 coins, Gvardiol score first against Fulham.
Yes.
Would bring back 290 coins.
Can you imagine if I win this game?
It would be illegal.
I'm coming live on the mic and you and the patrons are getting it on Saturday afternoon if that comes in. I'm top of the league. I'm top of the league.
You're not just top of the league. Dean's got 100 coins clear at the top of the league. It is
100 clear.
Well, nearly. Yeah.
Unfortunately, those patrons did get their bet right as well this week. So they've clawed back some space and I haven't won it yet. But, mate, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I spoke obviously about this on Monday's show, but I was. Well, I've only once before have I semi cheered a goal against Fulham, but I was very happy to see us concede this goal against Gvardiol. Put Man City 1-0 up on Saturday lunchtime. I was having a family barbecue. My family very confused as to why I was cheering when Man City went 1-0 up against Fulham. I then had to explain to everyone what was happening. And it was obviously quite a long story just to explain to everyone. My aunts, who have no idea about betting or football, probably didn't even know I had a podcast. But he's done it, mate. Gvardiol's done it. What a bet. I mean, I had so many messages after that moment, people laughing, people saying it's genuinely made their day. They can't believe it. The guru never loses, mate. I've been bottom of the league all season.
Yeah, I don't think you've come off the bottom of the league.
I've been so bad at this game. My predictions have been rubbish. I just haven't been putting enough, logic into my bets all season. To have not got one right since Christmas Eve and then to pull out the bet of the season. Gvardiol, my king.
What have you learned from this experience, Dean? What wisdom can you share with the rest of us?
My wisdom, mate, is just never give up on life. Like, no matter how things seem to be slipping away in any element of your life, just keep plugging away because it's never over till it's over. Everyone thought this game was dead. One of the patrons had made a jingle and in which it said, "The patrons will always beat Dean." Maybe that was motivating in some way. Maybe Luke Shaw is to blame for the fact that I've got to where I am today. But whatever adversities you're facing in life right now, whatever's keeping you awake at night and you're a little bit worried about, don't worry, you can turn it around. Just remember the guru wisdom to keep you going, to take that risk. It might just pay off.
Truly, a truly remarkable weekend. Like, really, really has flipped the entire game.
You must be gutted, mate. You're bottom of the league now.
I know. I was so comfortable. And it all looks like it's going wrong. It's all going wrong again. We're going to have to pull something out of the fire in these last couple
I'm interested to see how you retaliate, mate. I'm wondering what weird thing you're going to try this weekend. You're going to do, like, I don't know, Mason Mount to score a hat-trick or something.
No, probably not that, but we'll see what we can dig out of the fire in this last Premier League weekend to try and rein it in. We will see. But plenty of game time left, mate. As you say, it's not over till that final whistle blows, and it very much isn't done yet. And on that note, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to our transfer guru and top of the league, Mr. Dean Jones.
Betting guru Dean Jones, you're welcome. Cheers, mate.
Man who's got one bet right in 7 months. It's like suddenly the guru again. Do not listen to this man, I would suggest. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And we will see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.
How about Captain Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean LeFoot!
And he stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s. 1975, to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
She said, "Get out the chat room and clean my bed."
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.